This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, this is The Money on RN Summer. I'm Richard Adie. This week, the subscription economy. You might have been given a subscription for Christmas to a magazine or a newspaper, even a wine club. But this goes beyond that traditional idea. Instead of owning things like toothbrushes or clothes or cars, you subscribe to the service, so cleaning your teeth, having a killer wardrobe, getting from A to B. Because these companies don't want a one-off transaction with you, they want a relationship. So, Belinda, how many subscriptions do you have?
I've got 5 subscriptions. I have a media streaming service, music, online newspaper, and a physical one that comes on the weekend, magazine, and loo paper that arrives on my doorstep.
Loo paper. Okay. So we don't get loo paper, but we get media things. So there's 2 streaming services for the telly, 1 for music, a couple of online newspaper appy things, and 1 physical magazine. Now, what about memberships, though?
I have a couple of memberships, and thus far, they have not been called subscriptions.
Right.
So for a membership, really you're not getting any product or any benefit other than maybe the use of a premises. So a gym membership, I'm going to get the use of a gym. An RSL membership, I'm going to get the use to be able to go in and actually eat something, but I still have to pay for that product when I get in there.
This is Gary Mortimer from the QUT Business School.
A subscription, on the other hand, is there's a physical outcome from that. So whether that's I get to read a magazine or I get some product or a box of wine for my payment, very similar in many ways, subscription and membership. One is member, I'm going to join a club or I'm going to join an RSL. The other one is there's a physical outcome, whether it's reading a magazine or drinking wine that gets delivered.
But it's actually more than that. There's media, like newspapers and streaming. There's software. There's cloud-based storage. There's a long list of business services. In America, subscriptions were worth $420 billion in 2015. It's all music to the ears of Iman Gadosi, who heads the Asia-Pacific part of Zora, a consultancy on subscription.
The shift that we're seeing, it's that move from a product-centric mindset to selling effectively outcomes when you're selling goods and services. So the subscription economy is all about that. It's how can I service my end customer, whether that's a consumer or a business, basically on what they want. And consumers and businesses demand, they have a different set of expectations. They demand different things today.
And according to Zora, the model is taking off.
What we know today is the data shows this, that the subscription economy is growing faster year over year. So in 2015, it was 13%. And now in 2019, it's about 22%. That's between 5 and 9 times faster in terms of revenue growth than the S&P 500 companies' revenues.
So what sort of percentage of us have the subscription services, or what sort of percentage of companies offer them?
Our survey shows that over the next couple of years, you're going to have around 70% of Australian businesses offering their products and services on a recurring basis. And that could be subscription-based, it could be usage-based, but it would be a recurring revenue basis. And that effectively allows both the end user and the business to have a different relationship than what they traditionally would have had.
In this, as so often, the technology sector has led the way.
They were the first mover into the subscription economy. So over a decade ago, if you wanted access to, for example, Adobe Photoshop, you would have to buy Adobe for a few thousand dollars for a license, and then you have to pay maintenance on that to get the latest version. And Adobe is a good use case from a technology standpoint, where they flipped the model overnight and they said, hey, we're no longer going to charge you thousands of dollars for the license. We want to build an ongoing relationship with our end users, and we're flipping the script on the monetization, and we're going to put that into a recurring revenue model where you pay us a monthly fee, and for that monthly fee, we continually provide you with added value around our service. which then you end up having customers for life rather than having to continually innovate and hope that the customer would come and buy the new version.
You can see the appeal of customers for life, which is why industries that have always made things rather than offered services are getting into the subscription business.
We're seeing a massive shift with auto manufacturers around the world, and they are getting into the subscription economy by trying to generate direct relationships with the end customer. In that case, you and I as a driver. So you're seeing examples in North America and in Europe where brands such as Chrysler, Audi, Hyundai, Porsche, you could subscribe to their automobiles, right? So for a monthly fee, you would get access to whatever car you wanted, depending on the plan that you were on, obviously.
Yeah.
And then you have the choice. There's no burden of ownership. You don't have to worry about residual values. You don't have to worry about resale. You don't have to worry about insurance or anything like that. It's an all-in-one subscription fee that you pay. And effectively, the notion there is that, you know, they're trying to get you from point A to point B rather than trying to have you own their vehicles.
That's big because car makers have traditionally had dealer networks, and what they wanted to do is sell you a car.
The car companies are built around the dealer networks, and the new model establishes that direct relationship with the end customer, because the idea here is not to, I guess, sell you a car. It's to provide you with an outcome, and that outcome is that you're trying to get from point A to point B in various stages of your week and of your life. So a good example could be that during the week, you're commuting to and from work, so you're going to need a small car. And at the end of the month or in 6 weeks' time, you're going on a family trip, so you want to give that car back to the auto manufacturer and get a large 5-7-seater four-wheel drive. So it's the manufacturer, again, working around what you need and delivering the outcomes that you want rather than manufacturing and building cars to sell to you.
On the best of the money today, we're looking at subscriptions. In Australia, you can't yet subscribe to a service from a car maker, but you can have a box delivered to your door. Gary Mortimer from QUT.
In the US, the subscription box market sits around about $2.5 billion a year. It's actually grown at about 100% over the last decade, and no longer just about beauty products. It's moved into sort of pet and cleaning and even wine clubs, for example. Here in Australia, it's growing also, and there's more and more businesses and particularly brands getting involved, particularly from an online perspective. So order online, it turns up on your doorstep every month type of thing.
There are two types of box, the one that has a treat, more on those in a minute, and the one that doesn't.
So those types of products, if you think about buying those types of products in a supermarket each week, it's relatively a boring exercise and a mundane exercise, but it's something we often forget about. So having, you know, the razors turn up with some shaving cream every month, you know, it just saves you thinking about having to get that at the supermarket. Same with toilet paper. That was there's a good example of a US firm that does a range of toilet papers, and they turn up at your door. Or cleaning products, laundry detergent, those types of products that we always need and always tend to run out of work really well as a subscription service. It just turns up on the door.
In Australia, different firms are offering subscriptions to toilet paper, shaving needs, electric toothbrushes. In America, you can get it all from Target.
And we've seen Amazon do this a little bit with their Amazon Prime offer in the US, where you can simply select 10 products and just have them automatically delivered every month. So laundry detergent, soap detergent, dishwasher tablets, toilet paper, the types of products we go through quite regularly, sugar, flour, those types of things. The convenience offer works really well. And really nobody's doing that here in Australia, but I suspect that eventually that's where we'll see food and grocery shopping, just the basic staples arrive on your door every month, and then we only ever go in to buy the fresh produce from the supermarket.
Fresh is what this woman's all about. She's just not offering fruit and veg.
The three hot flower trends for 2019. Dried flowers, Scandi-style flowers, and sustainable flowers. Dried flowers are really on trend for 2019. They're not just for your nana. They're low maintenance.
Philomena Kwok runs a flower subscription business called Bloombox.
So in your Bloombox Co box, you receive a selection of seasonal flowers. They're the absolute best of what's in season, all locally grown, and each box comes along with a recipe to show you how to style your flowers.
So what is the arrangement? How often do I get a box, or do I get to choose that too?
So you get a box basically as often as you like. We deliver every week or fortnight or month, and you can sign up for however long you like.
Are the flowers already arranged, or did you say you include guidance?
Each box is very no frills. There's no fancy wrapping. There's no arrangement. It's very much like a fruit and veggie box. So you get basically the best of what's in season and this content and guidance to show you how to put it together for your home.
So how is the model different to that of a florist?
It's quite different to a florist. With a more traditional florist, their margin is really based on their artistic skill and putting together arrangements, whereas for us, we provide a very, in a way, naked product where we leave the arrangement up to the customer. But we provide value in terms of content, and we use technology to deliver that in a really accessible way for our customers. In terms of cash flow, completely different to a more traditional florist. So in flowers, revenue is very, very seasonal. So you've got the big holidays, Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, and to some extent Christmas, where you pick up quite a lot of revenue. And for us, it's more spread out over the year, which is very nice.
Not only do subscriptions smooth out the cash flow, they also offer another advantage.
We have quite little wastage, so we know in advance how many orders or deliveries that we've got coming up, and so we source directly to order to fulfil those orders, which is quite different to a more traditional florist where they may need to fill their shops full of flowers that they end up throwing out. So quite different, but in a good way.
That would make a real difference, I think.
Oh, absolutely. So, for instance, a traditional florist might throw out half of their stock every day because they need their shops to look full and beautiful and also to give customers choice. We don't do that at all, so we only provide what's best in season, and our wastage is probably below 1%.
That wastage or shrinkage must actually, we must have to pay for it. Otherwise, they'd just go out of business in weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So as a flower customer, you're actually subsidising nearly half of what's thrown out.
I don't think it's as high as 50% for most florists on most days, but clearly there's going to be something. And here's another difference. When you go to the florist, you choose the flowers.
So our customers don't actually know what's in their box until the very day they receive it. And we try and keep things really interesting. So you'll often find flowers in your box that are a bit different to what you'd see at a florist. Where we can, we work with micro growers and local growers that sometimes have some different varieties to the usual commercially grown things. So you might find something really unusual, like a branch of figs or a passion fruit vine in your box.
So how important do you think that is to you, that idea that your customers know that they don't know what they're going to get and that what they might get is something they maybe wouldn't have thought of?
I think for subscription in particular, that element of surprise or novelty is really important because you want your customers to be really excited and surprised when they open their boxes. It's our way, in particular, to keep people engaged and stick around for longer.
This is very much about operant conditioning. So operant conditioning means that you can either have a positive or a negative impact of an activity or an experience. So if the box turns up, what we're doing psychologically is having an anticipation. We know that it's coming at the end of the month, or we know that it's probably going to turn up on the second Tuesday of the month. So we're looking forward to that. The next thing that's happening is that we're looking for that reward uncertainty. So there's a lot of correlation between subscription boxes and gambling. So think about the pokies. We have a couple of wins and we have a couple of losses. So we don't feel real good, but then we go again thinking we'll get a better outcome. So subscription boxes works the same way. So sometimes it turns up on our door and we love the contents. We're anticipated by, you know, it arriving and there's a surprise and we open it up. And sometimes we're a little bit disappointed, but that doesn't discourage us. We wait for the next month to see if we get a good subscription box and the contents are different. And we get a surprise. We go, that worked really well and we feel great. So we wait for the next box to arrive. That reward uncertainty is really, really important because if we receive the same range of wines every month, very quickly we would get very bored of it. So having a mixed box of wine turn up with different brands or a mixed box of cosmetics or a mixed box of scented candles gives people that unintended surprise that we didn't expect.
This is The Money on RN Summer. I'm Richard Adie, and today we're looking at subscriptions. So far, we haven't thought about the phone, and we really need to, because they're already part of the subscription economy. Technology commentator Peter Marks.
There's lots of them. Apple now has updated in their most recent figures. They've got 1.4 billion devices and they've got a billion active users. And these people have already put their credit card details into their account on their phone. So they can buy something with just the touch of a finger or the ID of a face. So that's a selling platform that is in people's pockets. It's really powerful, really easy for them.
So hang on though, I don't think most of us, when with our phones, think of ourselves as subscribing to anything. We think that we're paying our provider for the phone and really the data, but we don't think of ourselves as having particularly a relationship with Apple or with Google / Android.
Well, of that billion users, 120 million of the Apple users are actually subscribing to something. Now, it could be things like some storage. It could be for their photos. They might have a music subscription, perhaps Apple Music or Spotify. They might be getting Netflix up until recently through their iOS account. So many of those people are actually having recurring subscriptions, newspapers, magazines, movies. These things are things that become part of your life. And they are rolling subscriptions that get charged every month or every year to your account.
And there's something else too, something you probably don't think about.
When you buy an app, Apple takes a 30% cut of the first of the initial cost up front. And then if it's a subscription, they take 30% on that first subscription and 15% if you keep going year on year after that. So they're actually getting quite a lot of money. And that, of course, upsets some of the businesses, subscription businesses, who feel that while Apple adds value or Google adds value with making it easy to get the app the first time, once that's done, the relationship is really between the consumer and the content maker. So it seems a bit rough for them to be getting even the 15% in trailing years.
Subscriptions turn out to be an important revenue stream.
The good thing about subscriptions, and I think we saw this most clearly with Apple's earnings problem in the last quarter, was that something happened in China, something happened to the supply chain, something's happening with world trade wars, and suddenly Apple's iPhone sales, they stopped growing. And the beauty of subscriptions is they're incredibly sticky. Once you've got an ongoing subscription, it's not only inconvenient to change it. It's often very difficult to actually turn it off in some cases. I think Apple's actually pretty good about that. They mail you and say, we're just about to renew your newspaper subscription. But for a lot of them, they become part of your life. And I think the most sticky parts of it are if you have subscriptions to things like storage for your family photos, it's a lot of work to actually change it. And of course, the new spectre is all of these health-related apps where your health is being monitored, your pulse rate, your exercise, your what you're eating. This is all in somebody's cloud. Now, it could be in Microsoft's cloud or Google's cloud or Apple's cloud. But once you've got your history up there and you're faced with moving all of that stuff somewhere else, it's very difficult for you to actually make that change. It's harder than changing banks, for example.
It isn't easy to change, but Netflix is making the effort. After a year of complaining about Apple's cut, it's stopped new customers using Apple's payment system.
Yes, well, Netflix, the Netflix app on iOS was the top grossing app last year, and it looks like Apple made $256 million out of their cut of the Netflix subscription. So Netflix has decided not to continue that arrangement, so that's going to hurt Apple's revenue, obviously, going forward. And I think the reason they can do that is that, actually, I should explain, if you don't get your subscription through the Apple App Store, the developer, the application, is not allowed to even link out to where to actually get a subscription. In fact, they can't tell the user how to do it. So they'll be presented with a login screen, username and password, with no explanation. You're not allowed to put any explanation of how to actually get a username and a password. Now, that's probably okay for Netflix, because people use Netflix on many platforms. Mm. They may have it on their TV, they may have it on their laptop using a browser, and yes, they'll have it also on their iPad or their iPhone. So they're in a good position. They're a strong brand. People can figure it out. But the fact that Apple won't let you have even an explanation in there is going to hurt some users.
Peter, this has been framed as having to pay Apple a tax.
Some people might call it rent seeking. They've got a monopoly there. The only way you can get your app or do payments through the app is to do it with Apple. And so they're leveraging that power and taking 15% after the first year. And yes, I think people do regard that as something to be defended against. The game Fortnite, extremely popular game, that you have to get that outside the App Store. You can download the game, but you've actually got to have an account elsewhere. So there are lots of examples. Spotify, though, is one where they do go through the App Store and you have a subscription through the actual App Store. You don't do it separately. So they've decided in that case it's better for them to have that convenience for users.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me.
Today on The Money, we're looking at subscriptions. If you're running a subscription-based business, is it more important to get new customers or keep the ones you have? Philomena Kwok.
There's actually quite an interesting balance that you have to have between focusing on retention and acquisition. I think that the sort of generally accepted wisdom on this is that your focus should always be on acquisition. When you look at the unit economics, it really makes more sense to acquire as many customers as possible. But retention is so key for us as well, particularly when some of our clients have actually been around since we started. So, yeah, very, very important.
Whatever business you're running, flower subscription, electricity, banking, insurance, there's always going to be some customers leaving. This is called churn. Iman Gadosi from Zora.
You're going to have churn, but for you to be able to have positive net retention, right? So, and what I mean by that is if you start the year, say, with $100 worth of recurring revenue, in the new year, you're going to have some churn. Just say you have $10 worth of churn out of your existing customer base. What you'd want to be doing is having $10 plus, so maybe $14, $15 added from your existing customers in terms of additional upsell revenue. So although you end a year with $100 and you start the new year with $100 and during that year you're going to have $10 of that go out the back door because you got churn, rather than ending the year on the 90 from the 100, you want to be adding additional revenue from your existing customer base. And this is all on top of your additional growth that you're going to have, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Your additional customer base, you wanted them to fill the gap for the churn, plus give you somewhere in that 5 to 10% more. That's the signs of a healthy subscription business.
That's exactly what Philomena Kwok's trying to have.
We invest quite a lot of time and resources into building up that relationship. So I guess it's similar to the relationship you'd have with your hairdresser. So we have lots of customers that may have originally signed up because they've gone through a breakup and they've told us that when they've signed up. And so we make a lot of effort to engage them, and you might even send them a little mixtape in their box. So, we try and have a really good relationship with them.
How many of your customers are kind of long-term? You've had them for perhaps a year, and how much sort of churn do you have?
I would say probably a good 20 to 30% are real long-term customers that have been around for a very long time and just don't churn at all. And then we've got sort of the less sticky customers that we might pick up off running a Facebook ad, for instance, that don't really stay around for quite so long. So there's a real mix. I can't really say any average churn numbers because it's so diverse.
And increasingly, diverse is the word for the subscription economy. Think about it. If you can get a car, clothes, flowers, and clean teeth, what's next?
We don't get surprised anymore. I guess a few years ago we would be surprised, but today we see some interesting businesses and business models. I guess one that comes to mind is the portable toilets that you put on building sites. We have a customer that effectively has on subscription portable toilets that they offer a service. That's probably one of the more interesting ones that come to mind. As I said, we don't think of anything as wacky anymore.
Imran Ghadosi's firm consults on this. He has a vested interest in the subscription economy, so he's going to be positive. Peter Marks, app developer and commentator, is a bit more removed.
The future is subscriptions, I think. Everyone wants to get to that place where they have long-term relationships with consumers, rolling subscriptions. You could look at what Microsoft has done. Now, they did fail in the hardware market, but they're happily moving on with Office 365 and those subscriptions. That's going very well. We're all subscribing to cloud-based storage services. So I think that is where the future is going to be for everyone. And in fact, Apple has pushed the price of phones up so much that people are starting to balk, I think, at spending, what, $1,400 Australian on a phone? That's a lot of money. You can also now have a subscription service where you get the phone hardware and it just rolls over, and after a couple of years you send it back and you get the new model and you're paying a subscription.
All right. So how many are people paying for now?
I actually have stopped counting, but I do go out of my way if there is something offered as a subscription. I do take it on because I do want to test the product and service before committing to it. But I would say, yeah, like if I look at my credit card statement, it's probably about a dozen.
Actually, I'm really good. Other than a gym membership, that's the only thing I'm sort of I'm connected to.
And so you're not a gym member, but no streaming services or Spotify or anything like that.
No, I'm a bit of a Luddite, unfortunately.
I did actually change banks recently, partially from the banking inquiry, and it's fascinating. I think I had 12 recurring payments being taken from my credit card account, and of course I had to chase them all down and find them all, and it's fascinating. Actually, and I'd forgotten about some of them. There were some that I really didn't feel I wanted to pay anymore. So I do have subscriptions to, I pay for YouTube, I pay for a couple of newspapers, but I don't actually pay for music. I'm in old school. I've got my ripped CDs at home.
So having had to think about it, are there any that you want that you don't have?
Oh, there are plenty. I'd love for fresh flowers to arrive. I can think of more media that I'd like to have. But ultimately, I can't afford it.
I'm with you on the flowers. I think that'd be wonderful. And I also think that there's a real case for a small, not a big, bottle of whiskey, a different one to arrive every month. That'd be lovely. Thanks to technology commentator and app developer Peter Marks, Dr. Gary Mortimer from the QUT Business School, Imran Ghadosi, Vice President and General Manager of Zora Asia Pacific, and the founder of Bloombox, Philomena Kwok. The Money is produced by Belinda Sommer. Our sound engineer is Isabella Tropiano. I'm Richard Ady.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.